our own Milky Way galaxy or local universe of Nibirn, has as its sovereign ruler the Paradise Creator Son by the name of Michael of Nibirn. He is better known to us as Christ Michael, through his having had his seventh and final bestowal incarnation on one of his lowliest inhabited planets, planet Urantia, Earth. Here he embarked on this final bestowal incarnation jointly with Jesus, Su/Emmanuel/Sananda, of Palestine 2000 years ago, overshadowing him during Jesus's difficult incarnation. This seventh bestowal exercise was so that he could finally earn the right to be recognized by his Trinity Father as a fully entitled sovereign of Nibirn, having served a long probationary period as regent on his behalf. This final right is only bestowed upon a Creator Son after he has undertaken at least seven incarnations on his seven lower dimensional worlds of descending order. He can then become qualified as a full sovereign of his local universe, entitling him to make all his own decisions thereafter. When the Trinity Father at first authorizes the physical formation of a new local universe for one of his Creator Sons, he enjoins the Paradisal Master Force organizers, physical formation agents of our cosmic creator, to manipulate energy matter into spheres of a certain stage of physical solidity. Once the first and central administrative sphere is physically created, the chosen Paradisal Creator Son can then appear upon the scene accompanied by his creative partner, consort, a daughter of the Trinity, Infinite Spirit, and thereby maintaining a feminine love energy link to our cosmic prime creator. The development of Nibirn. The first physical construction within Nibirn was the administrative headquarters world, a vast artificial sphere named Salvington along with its surrounding satellites. The completion of Salvington took over 1 billion years of present Earth time from the initial material formation by the physical power controllers to the arrival of the first living staff on the completed spheres. The next construction after Salvington was the formation of the headquarters spheres of the 100 constellations, followed by a further 100 headquarters spheres for the local systems in each constellation. Each local system is usually composed of about 1,000 inhabited planets. The local universe of Nibirn, as a relatively young cluster of starry and planetary realms within the Orvinton super-universe, has experienced a number of disruptions, including three rebellions against the ruling hierarchy. The last took place 200,000 years ago, known as the Lucifer Rebellion, in which 37 planets, including Earth, were placed under quarantine at its ending. However, much of these disruptions were largely due to the effects of an insidious force of evil coming from outside our grand universe and which infected some of the outer portions of the seventh super-universe of Orvinton over 1.3 billion years ago. This very powerful outside source of darkness came in from another grand universe which had become totally corrupt under its somewhat deranged leader. The infiltrating dark forces managed to corrupt some of the highest beings in the outer galaxies, local universes within the Orvinton super-universe. This force of evil led to many devastating galactic wars within our own Milky Way galaxy, between the forces of light, the Galactic Federation of Light, to which our planet was allied, and the forces of darkness, the Anchira Alliance, which many subsequently subverted dark planets belonged. However, the Paradise Trinity Father of our own grand universe appears to have been required by our cosmic creator to permit this darkness to run its course as a powerful learning tool within our sector. He has also had to take into consideration our cosmic creator's endowment of our limited free will as an encouragement towards the development of individuality. Only now, at these end times, has he finally been authorized by our cosmic prime creator to participate in a thorough total cleansing of this outside source darkness within our outer sector of the grand universe. See Chapter 10. Chapter 2, The Formation of Planet Earth, Urantia. Our own planet Earth, or Urantia as it was originally known, began its existence 2 billion years ago. But the stage had already been set over 6 billion years ago, when our solar sun was spun off from the Andromeda Nebula together with 1 million other suns at the same time. Half a billion years later, our sun was itself approached by the enormous Sangonera system with a dark giant at its center. This dark giant was as solid, highly charged sphere possessing a tremendous pull of gravity. A great column of our sun's solar gases was, through this powerful pull of gravity, detached and separated out, thus forming the 12 planets of our solar system. By 2.5 billion years ago, Urantia, Earth was already a well-developed sphere, about the tenth of its present mass, but growing rapidly by meteoric accretion. The Earth started as a veritable fiery inferno, rent with volcanic action. Eventually the atmosphere became more settled and cooled sufficiently to start precipitation of rain on the hot rocky surface of the planet. For thousands of years Earth was enveloped in one vast and continuous blanket of steam. This was followed by the cooling of the Earth's crust sufficiently to cause the forming of the first ocean, which was eventually to cover the entire planet to an average depth of 5,000 feet. Later, dense lava flows from the bottom of the present Pacific Ocean caused the first continental mass to emerge from the ocean. This precipitated a compensatory adjustment to the equilibrium of the gradually thickening Earth's crust under the ocean derived from the constant bombardment and accretion of meteorites. By 950 million years ago there had developed one great single continent of land with one large body of water, the Pacific Ocean. The first scouting party from the local system of Satan Ear arrived 900 million years ago and after an assessment announced that the life carriers, experts in the development of all life forms, could now be granted permission to develop new patterns of mechanical, chemical and electrical mobilization as well as life transplantation from other worlds. Urantia, Earth, had been declared to be a 1-in-10 experimental world, one of 61 other life modification planets within the local system of Satania. Here, as soon as conditions on Earth were considered ready, the life carriers would be allowed to create some new experimental life forms and fauna as their 60th Satania experiment designed to amplify and improve Satania's type of Nabadon life patterns. Meanwhile, the rising continental land mass of this era out of the ocean soon increased until it covered almost 10% of the Earth's surface. Severe earthquakes began only after the continental mass of land had emerged well above the water. Once the earthquakes began, they increased in frequency and severity for long ages. Eventually they were to gradually diminish over a period of millions of years, though even today Earth still has an average of about 15 daily. 750 million years ago the first breaks in the continental land mass began as a great north and south split, which later admitted the ocean waters and prepared the way for the westward drift of the continents of North and South America, including Greenland. The long east and west cleavage separated Africa from Europe and severed the land masses of Australia, the Pacific continent that was to become Lemuria, and Antarctica, separating from the Asiatic continent. By 700 million years ago, Urantia, Earth was approaching a ripening of conditions suitable for the support of living life. 500 million years ago the life carriers were ready to begin their work, planting primitive marine vegetable life, some of which was to metamorphose into animal life 50 million years later. They used a process of introducing existent forms of life from other developed worlds, then modifying them either to suit this planet's own conditions or as part of an ongoing experiment in developing new forms of life for one of this local system's 61 experimental worlds. By 400 million years ago, marine life, both vegetable and animal, was fairly well distributed over the whole world as the climate grew slightly warmer and became more equable. Fish were developed 250 million years ago, some of the teeth-bearing varieties being 25 to 30 feet long, ancestors of the present-day sharks. Reptiles from the Sirius solar system were introduced 140 million years ago in the form of crocodiles, scaled reptiles, and eventually both sea serpents and flying reptiles. Reptilian dinosaurs were soon developed and became the monarchs of this age. As egg layers they were distinguished from the other animals, they also possessed small brains weighing less than 1 pound, controlling bodies weighing up to as much as 40 tons. The first mammals appeared in North America 50 million years ago. A small reptilian, egg-laying type of mammal was soon flourishing, and the ancestors of the later kangaroos began to roam Australia. Soon there were also small horses, fleet-footed rhinoceroses, tapirs with proboscises, primitive pigs, squirrels, lemurs, opossums, and several tribes of monkey-like animals. By 35 million years ago, many of the more primitive mammals had become extinct, and the mammals of large size and small brain such as the dinosaur family were by then in decline. The land mammals slowly assumed domination of the earth, completely destroying the remainder of their reptilian ancestors. An inhabited world. A significant event occurred 1 million years ago, when Urantia, Earth was first registered by the constellation Fathers as a world inhabited by reasoning human beings. A mutation within the stock of the progressing primates, small lemur types who walked mostly on their hind legs and possessed large brains in proportion to their size, led to the development of primitive semi-animal tribes who lived in the treetops for safety at night. These were the ancestors of Earth's indigenous mankind. It happens from time to time in the course of events that one small spark can initiate a whole new development. And it was the rapid development towards human qualities by two members of a primitive tribe, a brother and sister, on the Mesopotamian or Persian peninsula at the beginning of the Third Glacial Ice Age, which would accelerate the pace of Earth's human evolution. Andon and his sister Fonta were born to parents little different from the average members of a treetop animal tribe who had already begun to learn how to make sharp tools of stone, flint and bone, and to use clubs in fighting. This fighting they indulged in frequently, almost wiping out the various other tribes with any likely human developmental potential. This particular brother and sister were to exhibit a considerably higher level of intelligence, no doubt brought over through an incarnation from a more evolved extraterrestrial world. At a very early age, they had not only learned to communicate with each other verbally but had worked out an improved sign and word language of almost 50 ideas. However, hard as they tried, they were unable to teach more than a few of their new signs and symbols to their parents. When about 9 years of age, they journeyed down the river together and following a lengthy conference reached a significant decision, to live apart from their tribe and exclusively with and for each other. This event was being observed through psychic facilities by every celestial intelligence stationed on Urantia, including the senior life carrier. 5 years later they would further distance themselves from their inferior animal associates, whom they feared might try to kill them through jealousy of their higher abilities. They journeyed north to a new area well away from their tribe, little knowing that they were about to found Earth's first indigenous, truly human race. Andon and Fonta had 19 children in all, thus establishing the genes and attributes of the first true human race, the Andonites. They lived to have almost 100 grandchildren and half a dozen great-grandchildren. The family was domiciled in four adjoining rock shelters, or semi-caves, three of which were interconnected by hallways which had been excavated in the soft limestone with flint tools devised by Andon's children. As time passed, the Andonic clans grew in number, always avoiding mixing with their inferior animal-like cousins, the simian tribes, which later split off to develop into a non-human line of ape-like monkeys, baboons, chimpanzees and gorillas. Eventually, through various unfortunate tribal conflicts amongst themselves, the Andonites were forced to disperse into a wider area. The geography of 950,000 years ago prevented them from penetrating very far into Asia or Africa, but pointed them to journey farther and farther north, until they were stopped by the slowly advancing ice of the Third Glacier Ice Age. Before this extensive ice sheet reached the southern area of what is now France and the British Isles, the descendants of Andon and Fonta had pushed on westward over present-day Europe and had established more than 1,000 separate settlements along the great rivers leading to the then warm waters of the North Sea. 800,000 years ago, after much tribal fighting and the eventual decline of the Andonites, the associated tribe of Badonon, led by a great-great-grandson of Andon, and living in the foothills of the northwestern highlands of the Indian subcontinent, started to gain ascendancy. This Badonon tribe, rapidly becoming superior, began a warfare of extermination directed against their inferior and animalistic neighbors. In less than 1,000 years, most of these animalistic groups had either been destroyed or driven back to the southern forests. The mixed descendants of the improved Bednite stock now appeared on the stage of Earth's human evolution as a new people, the Neanderthal race. The Neanderthalers. The Neanderthalers were great hunters during their existence between 8 and 500,000 years ago, since wild game was abundant with many species of deer, elephants and hippopotamuses roaming over the European continent. Cattle were plentiful. Horses and wolves were everywhere. Their relatively crude culture, made up of hunting and fighting, gradually spread and lasted for almost a quarter of a million years. During these spiritually dark ages, the culture of superstitious mankind reached its lowest levels. The Neanderthalers really had no religion beyond superstition, in which an overriding fear of the natural forces of nature had gradually developed. This led to attempts to placate the invisible forces of the natural elements through the sacrificing of humans. They were afraid of clouds, more especially of mists and fogs, and they also lived in fear of the dark and thus had a dread of nightfall. As long as the moon shone, even a little, they managed to get along, but when the moon became dark they panicked and began to sacrifice some of their best specimens of manhood and womanhood in an effort to induce the moon to shine once again. This terrible practice of human and animal sacrifice, which has been perpetuated by the more backward peoples of Earth down to the present day, had the effect over time of decimating all of their finest and most intelligent members of the Neanderthal race, leading to its ultimate final decline. As the various indigenous tribes of Earth fiercely fought each other and almost wiped themselves out around 500,000 years ago, the life carriers introduced the final development of humans, based on the six different colored races of more advanced potential already developed on other worlds. These were to be known on Earth as the Sanic races and were the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, white and the indigo, black races. The red race was eventually to settle exclusively in North America, the yellow race in Asia, the black races in Africa, and the green and blue, white in Europe, later known as the Caucasian races. It was the general hierarchical plan in the development of a normal evolutionary world to install a planetary prince ruler at the appearance of the first consciously aware human beings. This was a time for the life carriers, who had been responsible for the development of all the various life forms, to depart. The purpose of a planetary prince assigned by the local system headquarters would normally be to further advance the development of the social, economic and cultural lifestyles of the new races. However, since Earth was one of the 61.1 in 10, experimental worlds within the local system of Satania, and one in which the life carriers had experienced some developmental difficulties, this was delayed until the six colored races were finally installed 500,000 years ago. Two of the most senior life carriers involved in the development of Earth's life forms elected to remain permanently with planet Earth as advisors, and have done so right up to the present time. The high personage chosen to be the first planetary prince of Urantia, Earth, was Caligastia, who up to that time had been attached to the Council of the Life Carrier Advisors at the headquarters sphere of the local system of Satanian on Geusim. Caligastia had long sought a commission as a planetary prince, asking particularly to be awarded a decimal experimental life modification world, but his petitions were turned down several times by the Constellation Fathers. Eventually he was assigned to Urantia, Earth. He had up to that point demonstrated an enviable record of devotion to the welfare of the local universe, notwithstanding a certain characteristic restlessness coupled with a tendency to disagree with the established hierarchical order on minor matters. Lucifer was at that time the local system sovereign of Satania, and he was soon to elevate Caligastia to a position on his personal staff, where he successfully filled five successive assignments of honor and trust. Caligastia, as the newly appointed planetary prince, arrived on Earth 500,000 years ago from Geusim with his 100 senior assistants at the newly established headquarters in the Persian Gulf region, in an area corresponding to later Mesopotamia. At that time there were over 500 million relatively primitive human beings well scattered throughout Europe, Asia and Africa. The nucleus of the prince's headquarters settlement was to be the newly built city of Dilemisha, initially of 6,000 inhabitants. It was built mainly of one-story buildings enclosed within a surrounding protective wall of over 40 feet in height. From this base he established 10 specialized educational and training groups who then brought in all the most intelligent members of the various semi-civilized tribes surrounding that area for training and instruction. These various developmental councils taught the primitive tribesmen such things as well digging, water springs control, irrigation, improved methods of treating skins for use as clothing, and later the weaving of cloth. Great advances were made with them, particularly in methods of food storage. Food was now to be preserved by cooking, drying and smoking, and it thus became man's earliest valuable property, providing for the periods of famine which had periodically decimated populations in earlier times. For almost 300,000 years Prince Caligastia advanced the planetary civilization in a slow and well-planned manner, until its disruption by what would become known as the Lucifer Rebellion. The Lucifer Rebellion. As sovereign of the local system of Satania, Lucifer had reigned for more than 500,000 years as the chief executive of Satania, a system of 607 inhabited worlds. He was generally considered a magnificent and brilliant personality, and he stood in line for promotion to becoming one of the constellation fathers in our Milky Way galaxy, local universe of Nibiru. But during the last 100 years of his reign, Lucifer increasingly questioned the purpose behind the entire hierarchical establishment of the Our Grand Universe Administration. He eventually produced a Declaration of Liberty manifesto in which he charged that the Paradisial Trinity Father did not really exist and was a myth invented by the Paradisial Creator Sons to enable them to maintain their rule of the local universes in a so-called Father's name. Lucifer contended that the local universe systems should be autonomous, and protested that Nibiru's creator son Michael should not have the right to assume full sovereignty of Nibiru until after he had completed his final seventh bestowal life on one of his planets. He also objected to the amount of time and resources used in the vast program of training billions of ascending mortals on the numerous mansion worlds for a mythical ascension purpose up to the central universes, all to the detriment of local universe development. Lucifer first announced his plans to Satan, his first administrative assistant, but it required several months to win over this able and brilliant associate. However, when once converted to the contrarian theories, he himself became a bold and earnest advocate of self-assertion and liberty. The head chief of the seraphic hosts, the angelic orders, responsible for the day-to-day administration, also joined the Lucifer cause, even though his second-in-command, Manosha, remained loyal to the Grand Universe Hierarchical Administration. The defection of the head administrator of what in our terms would be our government's civil servants, influenced a large number of the local system administrative seraphim to follow in joining the rebellion. According to a then highly placed observer, the seraphic leader was spiritually blinded by the brilliant personality of Lucifer, and his charming ways had fascinated the lower orders of the celestial seraphim so that they simply could not comprehend that it was possible for such a dazzling personality to go wrong. As put forth by the Urantia book, present-day readers, perhaps impressed by Lucifer's highly evocative title, A Declaration of Liberty, chosen for his revolutionary thesis, may be wondering, why so much fuss and such strong opposition? Three reasons, along with their consequences put forward at the time by the Grand Universe hierarchy, were: first, and most seriously, it became clear on further analysis and observation that the so-called Declaration of Liberty was in fact a front for ambitions of a far more serious nature. This suspicion was soon to be fully justified by those on planet Earth when one of the converts, Caligastia, won over his first associate, Daligastia, and they jointly called the 10 Councils of Urantia in a session extraordinary. The assembly was opened with a statement that Prince Caligastia was about to proclaim himself absolute creator sovereign of Urantia instead of just as a planetary prince appointed by the Constellation Fathers. He demanded that all Earth's present administration abdicate by resigning all of their functions and powers into his hands as trustee, pending the reorganization of the planetary government. 60% of the administrative personnel agreed to comply. The other 40%, through their newly appointed chairman, Van, instead made a direct appeal against this to the local system of Satan Ear headquarters at Jerusalem. However, since Lucifer was the local system's sovereign, they obviously quickly received orders back confirming Caligastia as the new supreme sovereign of Urantia and commanding absolute and unquestioning allegiance to his mandates. The second problem was the serious split in governance at a number of levels, some administrators supporting, others opposing the revolution. The ultimate effect of the rebellion on Earth was that many of its skilled administrative civil servants and instructors were split and dispersed, causing considerable chaos and a major setback in the evolutionary progress of the indigenous tribes and any real progress in developing a higher civilization on Earth. For over 50 years, great administrative confusion reigned in Dilemmasha and its surroundings. The third problem was that even had the rebel plans for democracy been wholly genuine, the primitive tribes were not yet ready for anything resembling self or even participatory government. It was not long before the entire remaining staff loyal to Caligastia were engaged in an energetic defense of their city against the hordes of semi-savages who were to besiege its walls. This came as a result of the doctrines of liberty which had been prematurely spread amongst them by Caligastia. His grand scheme for the immediate reconstruction of human society in accordance with his new ideas for individual freedom and group liberties proved to be a swift failure. The surrounding relatively primitive tribal society rapidly sank back to its old levels. A deeper and considerably longer-lasting effect of the Lucifer rebellion was the reaction, one which may in retrospect be regarded as overkill, of the hierarchy, unaccustomed as they were to any questioning of the status quo and instinctively fearful of any possible adverse consequences. Though initially reacting with a policy of /non-interference/, they subsequently reacted with extreme severity. The Lucifer rebellion would ultimately involve only 37 inhabited planets out of the 607 within the local system of Satania. But this was deemed a possible threat to the 3 million or so other inhabited worlds within the local universe of Nibud. The 37 planets, including Earth, which succumbed to the rebellion have thus been kept in isolation, quarantine on the orders of the controlling Orvantan Super Universe Administration for nearly 200,000 years. A final adjudication was only made by the Most Highs of Uva Ursa in 1985, when the hierarchy's quarantine order was finally eased, having had a major negative impact on the evolution of Earth's civilization and people. However, the surrounding electronic veil insulating us from contact with other worlds, which was at the same time established by our cosmic creator, has not as yet been lifted. The story of Adam and even the Garden of Eden. Around 40,000 years ago, the life carriers on duty responsible for Earth's biologic and human development took note that, from a purely biological standpoint, the developmental progress of the Urantia races was nearing its apex. They made a petition to the Most Highs of our local Norlashidk constellation headquarters on Adentia, that Urantia should be inspected with a view to authorizing the next stage in a young planet's evolution. This requires that there be an installment of two Adamic biologic uplifters in the form of a traditionally termed Adam and Eve, that is, two highly evolved ascending mortal beings, a material son and daughter of the local system. This is the normal process for a young planet to further advance the genetic quality of the indigenous races. One important rule is that the chosen Adam and Eve genetic upgraders are never allowed to mate with the indigenous inhabitants, as they must retain intact their pure genetic characteristics brought over from their higher world. Only their own Earth offspring would be allowed to procreate with some of the carefully selected indigenous mortals in order to upgrade the world population's genes and racial characteristics. A planetary inspection was made by the constellation Fathers of Norlashidk, who arrived from Adentia, the constellation capital. Following this, the new Adamic genetic upgrading step for Urantia, Earth was approved by them. They made a selection of two suitable volunteer Adamic rulers for Earth from the residents of Jerusalem, the local system capital of Satania, who would be accorded the traditional planetary title of Adam and Eve. The next stage was to build a Garden of Eden on Urantia, Earth, based on the beautiful semi-tropical gardens of the constellation of Norlaishadk's headquarters sphere, Adentia. This area was to function as an administrative headquarters for the new Adam and Eve.